Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Socey. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which you can check out at filmsociology.tumblr.com. It's just you and me today, folks. Kobe has the day off for a special assignment, or two different excuses mixed into one. And so it's just going to be you and I, and depending on how the show goes, probably a classic interview. Actually, I will be playing a classic interview because of the post-Oscar lull that we are in right now. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I know it's been 5 days. Yes, 5 days since the Academy Awards have happened. And of course, all the talk was, of course, on Monday or late Sunday night, depending on where you were on social media. And I am happy to say I had a nice, quiet evening at home with family and a friend, just watching the Oscars, texting a friend of mine from college who I have a bet with every year, and that was it. I didn't need to go and be snarky on social media, although I did hit a few comments before I went to sleep, but was not online during the event itself. Just wanted to have some quality time with the chosen few. I have learned over time, ladies and gentlemen, yes, and this is the film show host saying this, that your film world, just like your sports world, is different from your everyday world itself. Sometimes they mesh in, but really it's a separate thing. So I've learned over time to not get really, really riled up over something not winning or something that does win. And I'll give an example. This year, out of the 24 categories, I got 17 right, which is not bad. In one bet, I won because my buddy Laura had 14 correct, but on another bet, my buddy Nicole got 18 correct. So I guess it balances out. But there wasn't anything that won that I didn't agree with that just made me throw up my arms in disgust. I didn't pick Birdman to win Best Picture. I thought that would go to Boyhood. Birdman is a film. I liked it. I didn't love it. But I understand, I get why it won Best Picture, sure. It's not my choice. You heard me say at the end of the year, my top film of 2014 was the Roger Ebert documentary by Steve James called Life Itself. I thought that should have been nominated for Best Picture. I thought it should have, of course, won Best Documentary, and it wasn't even nominated for that. So I tried not to wad up my knickers, period. So anyway, just a quick recap, and I'll go through my ballot. Again, I picked Boyhood. It went to Birdman. It's fine. For Best Actor, of course, Eddie Redmayne. And congrats to Eddie. I mean, people are now going to know him by name because of winning Best Actor for The Theory of Everything. Of course, a lot of people thought it was going to go to Michael Keaton. I thought this year would be a clean sweep of actors who have been around a while, and they're getting their just due. Keaton was the only one who didn't get that. My two favorite performances of the year didn't even get nominated. And one of them we awarded Best Actor to Ralph Fiennes, the IFJA, the Indiana Film Journal Association. We gave our Best Actor award to Ralph Fiennes for Grand Budapest Hotel, and he wasn't even nominated. And I'll get to the other favorite performance of the year in a little while because it opens today in Indianapolis. J.K. Simmons, that's a lock, and really, really happy for him. Really fine speech by Simmons. So remember, call your parents. Julianne Moore also had a solid, also one of those where it was a solid performance, and she was due for Still Alice. That was kind of a no-brainer. Patricia Arquette, another, has been around for a long time, comes from a known show business family, and a really solid performance as the mom in Boyhood. And yes, her speech was fine. That shouldn't be a shock to anybody. And if it made you look up facts and figures about who's getting paid, then she did her job. Best animated feature, of course, Big Hero 6. I still would have picked Lego Movie. We've screamed about that before. Got cinematography correct for Birdman, partly because of the gimmick. I was, of course, in my heart, I was pushing for Dick Pope for Mr. Turner, which opens Friday, only because the president of the Academy accidentally said Dick Poop. Costume design, that was also a no-brainer, Grand Budapest Hotel. Directing, I picked Boyhood, but of course it went to Alejandro Iñárritu for Birdman. That's fine. Citizen 4, I figured would get documentary. It did. Still waiting for life itself to get. Yeah, I know. Documentary subject, Crisis Hotline, Veterans Press 1. I got that correct. Achievement of film editing. I picked Whiplash, and I'm glad I did. So, no, that's not true. I had it for a while, and I thought, well, because of Boyhood and the 12 years that it took to accumulate all of that information and all of those characters and all of that story, I figured it would go to Boyhood. It didn't. It went to Whiplash, and that's fine. Ida for Best Foreign Film in Poland, got that. Grand Budapest Hotel got makeup. Sure, I picked Guardians of the Galaxy probably because it's a science fiction film. It was the token blockbuster that was going to get an award, and you know, I am Groot, and that's not necessarily a sound prediction power right there. For music, it went to Grand Budapest Hotel. I picked Theory of Everything. That's fine. Selma, the song Glory from Selma, winning best song. That was a no-brainer. Production design, Grand Budapest Hotel. I picked that. That was good. Animated short film, everybody picked Feast. I in my heart, I was hoping The Dam Keeper would. That was the one that Emma and I were really kind of rooting for, because it's really well made. There's a big gut punch about three quarters of the way through and a nice ending. Surprised on the phone call getting it. I thought it would go to Boogaloo and Graham, but a phone call with Sally Hawkins and the voice of Jim Broadbent, also a very solid, you know, a solid choice. Nothing wrong with that at all. Achievement in sound editing, yes, it went to American Sniper. I picked Interstellar because it was huge. Sound mixing, Whiplash, no-brainer. Visual effects, Interstellar, no-brainer. Screenplay, Imitation Game. Pretty good list of American Sniper, Imitation Game, Inherent Vice, Whiplash, and Theory of Everything. So that was the one that Imitation Game got. And for original screenplay, I was pushing for Grand Budapest Hotel. I was, in my heart, I was hoping it would go to Boyhood, but it went to Birdman. So there you go. Not bad. Not bad at all. Ladies and gentlemen, when it comes to watching the awards, and if it was fun, I didn't realize this until a few days ago. If you pick up last week's Nuvo, this is the one with the Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band on the cover, you'll see an old column in the, if you go to the table of contents page, they printed an old column of mine from 03, the Academy Awards drinking game, and reading it, it still holds up. It's a lot of fun. The Academy Awards and the Tonys are the only award shows I watch. And because I got other things to do, and you do as well. So I don't take it completely seriously, but it is the only ones that I will follow. And those are ones that, for a couple, one, it is a business. And if a film wins an award, there's going to be a boost in people going to see it, people going to rent it. Of course, this week on DVD and Blu-ray, two Academy Award winners came out in stores, Whiplash and Big Hero 6, and it's going to be a big boost, especially Whiplash. I'm really happy that Simmons got Best Supporting Actor. It was number three on my film top 10 films of the year. So hopefully, because it won a major award, more people are going to go see it. And every year is usually the same thing. It's too long. And half the people don't like the host. And Neil Patrick Harris, I thought, was fine. Yeah, some of the bits didn't quite go according to plan, like the lockbox, sure. I love people that didn't see Birdman, so they didn't understand Neil Patrick Harris walking through the awards in his tighty-whities. Thank you, Michael Keaton, for that. It was fun seeing some folks get really uptight about that. It's TV. So you hire the host. I don't watch the Oscars for the host. The host is supposed to do what they're known for doing best. You look back of all the past hosts: Jon Stewart, Ellen DeGeneres, David Letterman. They were hired to do what they are known for. You don't hire them to do, and then you switch the agenda. You switch their game plan. They are there to do what they do best, and half the people are going to like it, and the other half won't. So, but I'm not there for the host. It's like watching the Super Bowl for the commercials. Not doing that. And there's always a complaint that it's too long. And I'm already upset that the special awards, you know, the Career Achievement Awards, are not a part of the broadcast. So, anybody who thinks that the small, quote-unquote, smaller awards, whether it's costume design or sound editing or the short films, need to be eliminated from the broadcast, really need to be punched in the head. And I'll be the first one to do it. I love seeing those smaller categories get a global platform, or in this case, a global TV screen, a chance to be seen and heard by millions of people worldwide. And some of those acceptance speeches are the funniest because they're not expecting it. They're very excited. There is kind of a anything can happen when somebody who is, especially from a technical aspect, getting up there and just being themselves. And I think that's even Patricia Arquette, who got criticized for having comments about women's pay, that's coming from the heart. You knew it was going to happen. You know, she knew what she was going to say, but the unpredictability of what people say. I enjoy those moments. So don't take away the smaller categories. Lady Gaga singing The Sound of Music. Okay. That could have been something I would have taken out if you complain about it being too long. But anyway, it's a never-ending process. They'll try it again next year. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm curious if you go to my Facebook page or go to at Matthew Soucy, is there a film that won an award that you are now going to see because of that? And there's a lot of people out there that do that. They're curious to see why it won. So anyway, that is out there. I've said my piece on that, and I also know that when the Academy Awards have gone, that means it's the end of grown-up movie season. Now, there's a couple of exceptions. There are exceptions. A little background. A film to be qualified for the Academy Awards has to open up by the end of the calendar year. So a lot of time, of course, it will open in the big three. It'll open in New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles right before the end of the calendar year by December 31st. And, of course, there's always a big push of films opening on Christmas Day or close to it. And because of that, then it starts to trickle down into smaller by comparison cities like our fair city here in Indianapolis. And this will happen January, February, March. Well, it's the end of February, and we still have a couple of films that were nominated for awards that are now coming into town. But if a film, and it's amazing that when a film gets nominated, and especially when a film wins, it widens the release. It gets a wider release, and I think that's really cool. I think Roger Ebert is the one who said, as far as an acting standpoint, if you win an award, if you're nominated for an award, you're guaranteed one more film. If you win an award, you're guaranteed three more. So something like Birdman, which started out at the Landmark Keystone Arts Cinema and then has expanded, I think now will be expanded to a wider release. It hit, you know, going to the mall crowd in Middle America. That's really cool. Imitation Game, the same way. American Sniper, of course, that was the big blockbuster, but we knew that was going to happen. So those films get a wider release. Selma getting a wider release. But there are two films that were nominated that are finally coming into town. Excuse me, coming into town this weekend. One is the animated film Song of the Sea, about a brother and sister who embark on a fantastic journey to their home by the sea. Yes, I'm reading from the website. And also opening in theaters today is a film called Mr. Turner. This is one that's written and directed by Mike Lee. It stars Timothy Spall as the English painter J.M.W. Turner. And, of course, cinematography by Dick Pope. Got that right. A little inside info about the IFJA, the Indiana Film Journalists Association. They send us screeners to watch at home for award contention consideration, and then we have press screenings, usually in the morning at a theater that we get to watch, and then we accumulate who we think should be award worthy. There were two films that were not screened for us, and it really kind of bugs us. I guess we're getting big for our britches. We should be able to see everything because we're film critics. That tongue in cheek. But there were two films that were not screened for us in advance, and it kind of bugged us. One was Still Alice, and now that it won Best Actress, and we saw it, the critics, fellow critics and myself saw it, and we look at each other and say, yeah, that would have changed things. And for us, I think another one is Mr. Turner. Mike Lee, of course, is the gentleman who gave us Secrets and Lies, Topsy Turvy, Vera Drake, Life is Sweet, All or Nothing, Career Girls. And I've always said Mike Lee doesn't make films. He makes slices of life. Secrets and Lies being a great example of that. And this is a slice of life biopic. It's 2.5 hours long. There are some people that will complain that the film is slow. I don't think it's slow. It's a slow-paced film, and I think there's a difference. But it is the biopic, in a way. It's Mike Lee's version of the biopic, and it's Mike Lee's version of the biopic about the tortured artist. Turner was a great artist, not the greatest guy in the world to live with. You can ask the woman who plays his ex-wife, played by Mike Lee regular Ruth Hawkins. There's a couple of very tense scenes involving his ex-wife and their grown children. But as the film goes on, we find out a different aspect about Turner as not just an artist, but as a human being. And it's anchored by a rock-solid performance by Timothy Spall. And if you don't know who Timothy Spall is, look it up. Look him up. He's a classic fat guy, whether it's Enchanted or Harry Potter or a slew of English films. But this is his best work. What seems to be a kind of a grump face, and there's a series of grunts and guttural noises that Turner makes that says more than a lot of mainstream screenplays. I know, that sounds like a critic. But we find out this guy's relationship with his father, his relationship with different women in his life, whether it's a maid, whether it is a widow. And there are some scenes where the guy is actually quite engaging and quite nice, and other parts where he's just an insufferable brute, depending on who he comes across. And watching this unravel for 2.5 hours was really exciting for me. Fine painting sequence. That's another one. Is that Spall? He paints, and you can see it. It's not a cutaway where you see a picture of somebody's hands painting, and then a cut to a close up of the man or the artist, the actor playing the artist himself. Spall does his own painting, and it's quite good. So, I think my two favorite male performances this year, besides J.K. Simmons and Whiplash, that was the performance of the year, even if it's a quote-unquote supporting role, Ralph Fiennes for Grand Budapest Hotel, and Timothy Spall for Mr. Turner. And I hope people go see this. And because it got nominated for a couple of technical awards, and well-deserved, I might add, I'm really hoping people will go check that out. It's really solid. And this is would be normally the part where Ben Kingsley's screaming yes, but I'm here. Kobe isn't. So anyway, that is opening in theaters, as well as, like I said, the nominated animated feature Song of the Sea, which I've not seen, and I've not seen The Tale of Princess Kaguga. Yeah, and I know that is out on DVD and Blu-ray. That came out last week. Also opening in theaters this is the other part, folks. Now that Oscar season is over, and we now have Song of the Sea, and we have Mr. Turner, and I think that's it as far as films that were up for awards that will be coming to cinemas in our fair city, which means now we are in cinematic wasteland waiting for summer. So hopefully, but there are films that are released in January, February, and March for a reason, like The Boy Next Door, like The Loft, like The Lazarus Effect. We'll see. Focus is also opening in theaters with Will Smith and Margot Robbie. She is, of course, the wife of Leonardo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street. Emma doesn't like her. Anyway, those are opening in theaters as well. So we also have, if you don't have other plans, that's fine, happening tonight at the IMA. This is their final film of the Winter Nights film series, and this will be a doozy, Monty Python and the Holy Grail from 1975. They showed this outdoors a few summers ago, and now they have it inside. I got a feeling there will be coconuts and people dressed like they're auditioning for Spamalot, but always worth seeing with an audience. So that is happening tonight at the IMA. That's at 7:30? I think it is. Trying to remember. 8 o'clock. So that is happening tonight at the IMA. At Kobe's alma mater at IU Cinema tonight at 9:30. Well, actually, by the time you get this, 6:30 p.m. as a part of the underground film series, The Explicit Celluloid Body. And at 6:30, at 9:30, also part of the underground film series, The Short Radical Films of M.M. Sarah. tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock, the Lindsay Anderson film starring Malcolm McDowell called If. And this is the one that put McDowell on the map. This is the one that led him to getting cast in A Clockwork Orange. It's a boys' school in England, and some of its more rebellious characters, including Malcolm McDowell. So it's definitely worth checking out. 6:30 is part of the International Art House series from last year, the drama Mommy. And then at 9:30 on Saturday night, as a part of the film Full of Wonder, the films of Peter Weir, the fine Australian director, at 9:30 tomorrow night from 1977, The Last Wave. Sunday, March 1st, as a part of the Queer Disorientation series from 1975, Thundercrack at 3 p.m., as a part of the Peter Weir series, Sunday night at 6:30 p.m., Dead Poets Society. The Peter Weir double feature on Monday, March 2nd, at 3 o'clock, we have Witness, the excellent crime drama with Harrison Ford. And at 7 o'clock, Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World. Really good ship drama with Russell Crowe, Paul Bettany. They built a damn ship for this movie, a boat. Tuesday, March 3rd, lecturing at IU Cinema at 3 p.m., of course, Peter Weir. And then at 7 o'clock, his film from 1975, Picnic at Hanging Rock. Wednesday, March 4th. At 4 o'clock, another Peter Weir double feature on Wednesday, March 4th. At 4 p.m., Gallipoli. For a lot of people, that was their first Mel Gibson film, if they didn't see Mad Max. And at 8 o'clock, the Jim Carrey film, The Truman Show. Solid performance by Jim Carrey. Great performance by Ed Harris. Thursday, March 5th. The InLight Film Festival at 3 p.m., the documentary The Special Need. At 5:30 p.m., the documentary Call Me Kuchu. And at 8 p.m., the documentary, Sepedi Reaching for the Stars. And then to plan for next Friday as part of the International Art House series, Watchers of the Sky from last year, the documentary The Return to Homs, and the documentary Mala Mala at 2:30 p.m., 5:30 p.m., and 8 p.m. So anyway, if you are a big fan of Peter Weir, going down to Bloomington, it would be well worth your time and money. At the Art Craft Theater in Franklin, this is a can't miss. I know there's a lot of can't misses. There's lots of choices. There's lots of films to see. If you've seen all the Academy Award winning films, nominated films, and you want to check something out, you got IU Cinema, you have the IMA, and the 27th and 28th, at 2 and 7:30 p.m. at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin, the Best Picture winner from 1963, the David Lean masterpiece Lawrence of Arabia, with Peter O'Toole, Omar Sharif, Anthony Quinn. God, just a great, great film. I think we can play the trailer. Here we go.
I deem him one of the greatest beings alive in our time. We shall never see his like again. His name will live in history. It will live in the annals of war. It will live in the legends of Arabia.
Who is he?
Petu. Tapas!
What is your name?
My name is for my friends. None of my friends is a murderer.
For over a quarter of a century, controversy has raged around the name of T.E. Lawrence. No man of our time has drawn upon himself so much praise and so much criticism. Lawrence of Arabia, the man torn between two civilizations, Lawrence of Arabia, filmed against a canvas of awesome magnificence.
Lieutenant Lawrence, sir, is not your military advisor.
But I would like to hear his opinion.
Damn it, Lawrence! Who do you take your orders from?
From Lord Faisal, in Faisal's tent.
Hailing the birth of a new star, Peter O'Toole as Lawrence of Arabia. What was he really like, this controversial figure who became a legend in his own lifetime?
He was the most extraordinary man I ever knew.
He was a very great man.
He was a poet, a scholar, and a mighty warrior. He was also the most shameless exhibitionist since Barnum and Bailey.
What, in your opinion, do these people hope to gain from this war?
They hope to gain their freedom.
There's one born every minute.
They're going to get it, Mr. Bentley. I'm going to give it to them.
Lawrence and Arabia. Together, they made history. Now, a gathering of international stars unfolds the story. Alec Guinness as Prince Faisal.
The English have a great hunger for desolate places. I fear they hunger for Arabia.
Anthony Quinn as Auda Abu Taihi.
I carry 23 great wounds, all got in battle. 75 men have I killed with my own hands in battle. I scatter, I burn my enemies' tents. I take away their flocks and herds. The Turks pay me a golden treasure, yet I am poor. Because I am a river to my people.
Jack Hawkins as General Allenby.
I believe your name will be a household word when you would have to go to the War Museum to find who Allenby was.
You're the most extraordinary man I ever met.
Leave me alone.
What?
Leave me alone.
Jose Ferrer as the Turkish Bey.
Your skin is very fair.
Also starring Anthony Quayle, Claude Rains, Arthur Kennedy, with Omar Sharif as Ali, and Peter O'Toole as Lawrence.
Right, an epic film deserves an epic trailer. That is, of course, the trailer for Lawrence of Arabia, which is playing tonight and tomorrow, 2 and 7:30 p.m. at the Art Craft Theater in beautiful Franklin, Indiana. Well worth the drive. I kind of use Lawrence of Arabia. Well, of course, we poke fun of Lawrence of Arabia a lot on this show because of my friend Mike Perry and the scene from The Hollywood Nights, which argues whether there were words to the theme from Lawrence of Arabia or there were not. But this is quite positive. If I had to make a list, and I don't make lists, I'm a film show host, but I'm also I have things to do. But as far as favorite epics of all time, probably Lawrence of Arabia would be at the top, if not near the top. I think O'Toole is great. You know, it was a shame that it, that year it had to go to Gregory Peck for To Kill a Mockingbird, but you can't argue with that either. But Lawrence of Arabia is just a great, great piece of grand storytelling. And I try to tell younger people, especially Emma, you know, they filmed this out in the flippin' desert, you know, not a back lot, not with CG, you know, real extras, real stunts done by real people. And also a really solid performance from O'Toole as well as the rest of the company. This also has a film has a special place in my heart because in the summer of 1989, I got to pay $10 in 1989. Think about that. People have been complaining about movie prices ever since I could remember. But at the old Fox Theater in Detroit, They had it was one old what was an old I think it was a vaudeville house, but it was a movie house, concert hall, and then like a lot of theaters in a lot of downtown cities fell by the wayside. And then in the late 80s, they plunked down a couple of million dollars to renovate the theater. And one of the first events they had after reopening was a 70-millimeter print of Lawrence of Arabia, which I paid $10 to see. They had a live organ accompaniment, gorgeous theater, and then just a great film. And I had never seen it from start to finish before. And to see it on a big screen, that's one you got to see on the big screen. I have wagged my finger many times to my lovely daughter, telling her I don't ever want to see her watching a David Lean film on an iPad or a tablet or even a computer, I think, or even a phone. And of course, her response is, why would I want to watch a David Lean film? She just does that to antagonize me. But I get it. But yeah, grand epic movie making. Definitely you should see it on a big screen if you can. All right. We're going to shift gears a little bit. We already talked about a couple of films that are out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Of course, the big Oscar winner Whiplash is out, as well as Big Hero 6. And as you know, on Film Sociology, we are pro that guy, that lady. We are big supporters of what are quote-unquote character actors or familiar faces. And of course, now, if you didn't know J.K. Simmons' name already before Whiplash, you do know it now, because his obituary in the New York Times will say Academy Award-winning actor J.K. Simmons. It's not a comfortable film to watch. It's it pokes at the ideas of what it takes to be the very best and what it takes to impress somebody to be the very best. Do you want to be treated this way, or do you want to treat people this way? No, but it's fascinating to watch. And Simmons is just amazing in it. We've seen him, if you follow his work, everything from the guy in the insurance commercials to Juno's dad, to the work in Oz, to the work in Spider-Man, to the work in Law and Order. And he was able to utilize the lightness of some characters and performances and the darkness of other characters and performances, and wrap them up into this one package that asks you constantly if you are rushing or if you are dragging, and it's worth it. So definitely go check that out. Big Hero 6 was a lot of fun. If you combined The Incredibles, Big Bang Theory, and The Iron Giant, you come up with Big Hero 6. Even though the Lego Movie didn't get nominated, it wasn't the best year in the world for animated films. Big Hero 6, I really liked it. Didn't love it. There wasn't an Up or a Ponyo. Yeah, I'm a fan of Ponyo. There wasn't a Grand Slam home run this year, but they were also very good films. And I did enjoy Big Hero 6. Now, I asked the question, did anybody, except for the three leading guys, and a few of the supporting actors, did anybody really need a sequel to Horrible Bosses, besides looking at Jennifer Aniston? Okay, just checking. The first Horrible Bosses, I thought was funny, and if it hadn't been for The Hangover, this film probably wouldn't have been made. But it's one of those comedies I think I would have liked better if I was Kobe's age or younger, because I'm an old person. Excuse me. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, as far as old titles, we have Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. We have The Majestic, the Jim Carrey going for drama, which I liked and a few people did not. On Blu-ray, if you need this, the film version of the Elmore Leonard novel 52 Pickup. Roy Scheider and Margaret. Really good pot boiler from the 80s. Fellini Satyricon is out on Criterion. This was in his huge 70s excess cinema phase, and I liked it, and I know some folks didn't. And I like Fellini's satire. And apparently you need this on Blu-ray. And this is a subject that we're going to talk about, I think, hopefully fairly soon, as far as animated films that were kind of geared toward grown-ups in the 70s and early 80s. I bring this up because I finally showed my daughter last week The Last Unicorn, which if you've never seen, it's a darker film than the way it is pushed off in the ad campaign. But another one that I remember watching in the early incarnations of cable in my younger days is now out on Blu-ray by Criterion, and it's Watership Down. And, yeah, bunnies physically tearing each other apart, and it's a class system, and it's a gang story. It just happens to be the characters are big, furry bunny rabbits. So, yeah, I'm figuring out when I'm going to show that to Emma. But this is a subject that I've talked about with a couple of people, and I think we're going to discuss this in a future show very soon. Well, ladies and gentlemen, because it's Oscar season, and by the way, a special thanks again to James Keach, the fine actor and director of the Glen Campbell documentary, Glen Campbell, I'll Be Me. It was up for Best Song. Really good performance of it at the Oscars by Tim McGraw. And, of course, last week it was an excuse for me to play my chat with him because it's Oscar season. And since we are now in the post-Oscar lull, even though it's 5 days, is another blatant excuse to me to play one of the first interviews that I did at Film Sociology that kind of put me on the map, that put the show on the map, I should say. And it was because he did a performance. He made an appearance and did a performance on stage doing some dramatic readings with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. So we're going to go back several years, and this is my chat with Academy Award-winning actor F. Murray Abraham.
Well, what's on your mind?
Well, first off, I guess I should. How should I address you?
Your Majesty.
My liege, I was thinking, but.
My name is. I'm half Syrian, half Italian, and it's hard to please both sides of the family. So my father's name is Frederick, and they called. My name is Frederick, but I decided to use an F because the Syrians call me Farid, and the Italians call me Federico. So with the F, I pleased everybody.
All right, so F. Murray.
That's fine. Murray is just dandy.
Murray, okay.
And how do I call you?
Matthew.
Okay, Matthew.
And so obviously you played a lot of Wasp, obviously, with your background.
I played a lot of Wasp, yeah. I don't think I ever played a Wasp in my life.
How did you get hooked up with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra?
I've been doing this for years, all over the world.
This particular piece?
And I think that this particular piece, you know what we're doing, right? The Copland piece?
Lincoln's Portrait.
Yeah, it's just, it's very meaningful to me. And the first time I ever did it was here in town with the New York Philharmonic. And I was carried away. I really was very moved by that, by those words. And I had done some studying. I had played a Lincoln once, believe it or not, speaking of Wasps.
A Continental?
A Continental Lincoln? No. Hey, you know, that was a great-looking car.
Yes, it was.
It was a wonderful car at one time.
Back when cars were a piece of art.
Well, yeah, you're talking to a car fiend. I agree with you. When you could, we could spot cars by the sound of their mufflers. They were that individual. I don't know if you know that.
I grew up in a automotive town up in Michigan, so yeah, I remember those days.
Where were you, around Flint?
Yes, I grew up in Flint. Got out with all my fingers.
Yeah, well, my people were steel workers in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
We made the steel that, I don't know, you have your own steel mills in Indiana, I know that.
Well, not really. Gary's a wasteland nowadays.
Well, have you been to Flint lately?
Yes.
I mean, it's really too bad. It's a depressing thing. A friend of mine who lives there, when I did a concert in Detroit, it was one of these concerts, only this was an interesting concept. A concert, it was trying to think. It was, you know Stravinsky's Story of a Soldier.
Yes.
Rather, his music for it.
Right.
Well, Vonnegut has written an adaptation. He said that the original story has nothing to do with reality. He said the music does, the discordant, the wonderful, driving, strange, and absolutely brilliantly original music. I worship Stravinsky. This is a tough piece of literature and writing. He hated war, Vonnegut did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extraordinary. I don't know why it's not done more often instead of the original. But I was doing it in Michigan, and a friend of mine took me out for a ride out by the lake to have a nice fish dinner. And I saw all those beautiful mansions, all for sale.
Yeah. Now, how often do you get to do pieces like this with symphonies?
Well, it's whenever I get calls, and if I'm not making a flick, if I'm not doing a play, I jump at the chance because I don't know how to explain it. If you have a chance to be on the stage with an orchestra, you have to do it. You have to arrange it with, if you have any pull anywhere, just to be on the stage with them while they're working out.
Now, is this a piece where it's in between the songs, or they're playing under you as you're reading?
It's going to be between and during.
Ooh.
It's just thrilling.
That's got to be a rush.
Oh, I can't begin to tell you. And I've worked with some of the greatest in the world. And it's thrilling. I mean, really thrilling. It's like a different kind of a thrill, because there's no, it's not an intellectual activity. It's far beyond the, it's really deeply, it's visceral, but at the same time, it's transporting. It's transcending. Great.
Well, it's interesting, because when you do a film, unless the director pumps music onto the set during a shot, I mean, that's one thing, but to be able to have, I mean, the soundtrack is behind you.
Yeah, the only problem with it, I mean, the danger, not the problem, is that if you miss your cue, you're in trouble, because the orchestra doesn't try to vamp and catch up. It's hard to do with 90 pieces,
it's,
you know.
It's not a jazz combo.
It's great. It's also a completion of sorts in terms of an actor, because there are things that an actor in the classical works, for example, any Shakespeare, any musical piece of work, Molière, for example, or even some of the beautiful music that's in Tennessee Williams, you're never going to be able to achieve what music achieves. You try to, vocally and also spiritually, but you can't accomplish what Mozart does. It's just a different thing. But the idea that you can combine them, it's a kind of a gift, I must tell you. It's like a little present. And the whole thing is, I'm sure, because I did that movie so many years ago, Amadeus.
25.
I mean, can you imagine? That thing is still alive. People still love it.
Yes, I can, actually. I was 14 when that film came out. I remember being the youngest one in the theater by about 30 years. And think, not only did this film introduce me to and open my mind to classical music, but I went, wow, who is this guy? You know, the guy from Animal House is great, but who is him? Who is he? And that was, for a lot of people, that was the world introduction to F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah, it was a treat. It was a gift. The problem is, of course, it's not being able to do another one like it, you know?
No, Amadeus 2, The Final Years.
Well, my son said that there should be a sequel where Amadeus is where Mozart's son grows up and wants revenge. He wants to call it Amadambo. Anyway.
Don't give Michael Bay any ideas. Now, when you filmed that, did you do the young Salieri first or the old one first?
The old one. I did all the old stuff first. We did it in 3 weeks.
Wow. How much time on the chair for makeup?
4 hours. 4.5 hours each morning.
Were you able to sleep?
Well, I was pretty intense. I don't know how to tell you. I'm a pretty intense actor anyhow, but I was completely dedicated to that, and I lived alone when I was in Prague to be away from the company. It was all completely focused. I think the biggest mistake I made, if you can call it a mistake, is expecting to, from that point, do that kind of work for the rest of my life in film. That's kind of naive.
Well, what was the silliest script you got after winning the Oscar?
Oh, gee, there were so many that I refused. I should have done them just for the money, if not anything else. But they were just silly. They made me out to be a villain. I don't think Salieri is a villain. Well, I think he's a real human being.
Well, Carl Malden said bad guys don't wake up thinking they're bad guys. They got a job to do.
Good old Carl Malden. I just saw One Eyed Jacks not long ago.
He's so good in that. Yeah, I just watched Baby Doll. Not a film to watch with your wife, but
that's another good performance. Was that Kazan?
Yes. It's funny you mentioned intensity. My daughter, she's 7, and she said you were intense in Muppets from Space.
Isn't that great?
She's like, you're talking to him? I went, yes, that's part of Daddy's job,
oh,
believe it or not.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
That's so flattering. Isn't that a great age?
Yeah. It's funny. My wife is an actress, and any role that my wife plays, my daughter wants to play. So she refers to herself as Baby Gertrude and Baby Parthy. And last year, Lynn got to do Lear, and Emma said, I'm Baby Goneril. And we went, no, you're not. No, no, no. That's wrong, and on so many levels. Yeah, don't give her any. I directed that, but she doesn't remember, thank God.
You're an actor.
I try. My wife is equity. I'm independent. And if it's a choice
Good.
Between my wife's guaranteed equity money and or my vanity projects, I let the missus work.
Works the work. So. I mean, you can see that for some of the films I've done. I mean, after a while, you think, well, I'm not going to wait anymore for a good film. I've got to make the rent.
Well, even
after a while, you think, oh, God, do I have to do this? And you do.
But I think even films that maybe there's not high-profile roles, but when I see you in something like Insurrection and Surviving the Game, I'm like, well, he's going to be fine. He knows what he's doing.
Well, I love the idea of people asking me, like, well, why are you doing those movies? Well, that's kind of a dumb question. I mean, you do what you have to do. But if they asked me to do other films, I would do them. But it seems to me that my life is really revolves around the theater here in New York, and I do films when I have a break from the theater,
as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, but it's a nice life. Mm-hmm. Just one of those. I love Shakespeare, and you can't live on Shakespeare, not in New York anyway. I don't think you can anywhere. I mean, I don't think they pay very well.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it after Amadeus that you wound up doing a lot more classical theater?
Yeah, I was doing it before, but afterwards it was amazing how it kind of guarantees your work life. It's hard to believe. I mean, I'm a good actor, but there are a lot of good actors around. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not selling myself short, but you know what I'm talking about. You got to have some luck in this business.
Sure.
And I've had some luck, but ever since I won the Academy Award, I've been working practically every day. Just been wonderful stuff off Broadway, experimental stuff with Richard Foreman and with, Tom O'Horgan and gosh, I guess everybody in town. I've really had a great time.
You still
do. I'm going to continue having a great time.
Well, it seems like it's been, from an artist standpoint, to be able to do stage and screen and voiceover and narration, so you're not stuck in a rut. You're not stuck doing a soap or a sitcom for years and years and years.
Yeah, it's the best.
And one of the things that's always been was cool for me, especially after seeing Amadeus, was you were one of that guys. And when I saw your earlier work, I'm like, oh my! I was a caffeinated 15-year-old, so I'm like, oh, it's the Amadeus dude and Scarface and Serpico and the Sunshine Boys. It was one of those, I have to go back, and this is before the internet, I'm like, I have to go back and find out what else this guy has done to lead up to this.
Oh, you got to take a look at the Ritz.
Yes, I saw the Ritz at too young of an age. I should revisit it again now that I'm more semi-mature.
Well, it works better on the stage, I think, but it's not a bad picture. Rita's great.
Yes, and I especially liked your work in Mighty Aphrodite.
Oh, thanks, that was fun.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you couldn't have seen any of my stage work, though, because I...
Well, you're still doing some stage work, right? I just need to go east.
I've been doing Ethan Coen's plays. Those are pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know anything about them.
What are some of the plays?
Well, he's written 6 plays, and I've been in 4 of them.
So you're one of the community players.
They're 6 one-acts, short pieces, and it seems like we've got a hookup, and it's great. Because they're funny and they're brief and they're... What did Chekhov call his one-act plays? Vaudevilles? That's kind of what these are.
Right. Now, did I see you just completed a picture of Barbarossa?
Yeah, it should be coming out next month.
This isn't a remake of the Gary Busey, Willie Nelson Western, right? This is completely different?
Gosh, I didn't know about that.
1982.
No, I don't know that picture. I know Gary. We worked together.
Mm-hmm.
In Surviving the Game.
Yes.
He's, we really had a good time, he and I. I mean, you've heard stories about him, and I...
Yeah, we've seen him on TV, yeah.
I didn't see any of that stuff. I mean, we had a great time. We became quite close.
I mean, the guy doesn't get an Academy Award nomination for nothing.
Well, that was a wonderful performance.
Yes. What is this Barbarossa about?
It's a historic character who actually tried to unify Italy, but under his command. Barbarossa came in from the north and tried to take it over. And it's this heroic story of a stand that these farmers made against this brilliant and great general. And these Italian farmers won. It's a historically in Italy, it was a great moment in their history.
And you shot it in Italy?
Yes, I do a lot of in Romania and Italy. I do a lot of work with the Italians. I've been doing it for ever since before Amadeus, actually. It's kind of my second home.
And you got the...
this picture I'm doing now is part Italian. It's Italian and Canadian financed.
This one is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The one I'm working on. And Barbarossa was strictly Italian.
Oh, I see.
And that was the fifth film I made with that director. And I'm going to make another one with him next year in Italy and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
That, too, is a co-production between Canada and Italy. Don't ask me the connection, but there it is.
It's all right. I remember going, my family and I went to Stratford, and there was the Canadian-Chinese restaurant. Whatever it takes. What's the picture you're working on now?
This is Giancarlo Giannini, and I are old friends.
Ah.
He wrote this script for us, and he's starring in it and directing it as well. And we're shooting it just outside of Toronto. I'm in town for only about 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
I had a break, and I came here to be with the family. But we're shooting up there, and then when we finish up in Toronto, we'll go back to Rome and finish up there.
I
should be done with the picture on the end of October.
What's the title?
It's several titles. It feels a little like Woody Allen, you know, the X Project.
Or untitled Woody Allen.
It's called Looking in Obituaries.
Yeah, it's going to be renamed in the States.
It's a good script. He did well. He wrote it, too.
Cool.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's an inventor, too, by the way. Anyway.
What did he invent?
He is an electronic genius.
Really?
He does inventions for his own house, for his own sound system. And it's a remarkable man. He really is, aside from being a remarkable ladies' man. They just fall over their feet when they see him. He's had a wonderful career. His work with Lena was just sensational.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Lena
Britt Mueller.
Yes.
I worked with her on a picture that she wrote.
What was the picture?
It was called, enough about romance, now let's have some sausages. I mean, that's what she writes. But it was, my co-star was Sophia Loren.
Oh.
And she played my wife, lover, and I got to kiss her a lot of times.
Wow. You wish Kubrick was directing that day.
Yeah.
Take 130.
I don't know if I understand Kubrick's last flick. I was very disappointed, and I'm a real big fan.
Eyes Wide Shut? I was with it until the third Last Warning.
I just thought this is becoming predictable and dull. And he's never dull.
No.
I mean, his early stuff is still great. The Killing is still
love The Killing. It's so funny when people, I show that to people, and I think they're used to the wide, huge, you know, almost bleak scope of something like The Shining in 2001, but The Killing is so good.
Yeah.
Great heist film. Now you got me thinking of Sterling Hayden, and I'm interviewing you.
Sterling Hayden, wow. Continues to churn it out, doesn't he?
Mm, always timeless work. It was funny,
have you seen the... my wife discovered it recently. The original upon which, speaking of Sterling Hayden, Airplane was based.
Oh,
The Zone, or what was it?
I thought there were a couple.
Zero Hour,
yes.
Have you seen it?
Not in a long time.
Oh, man, it's so funny.
So the Zuckers really were taking notes watching that.
No, they were lifting lines. The names are the same, too.
Oh, really?
At one point, Sterling Hayden say, it's a fine time to quit smoking. That was his line originally. And he's very serious. I mean, of course, they're all very serious. But it's great. I mean, you got to see it.
I'll look for it because it was funny. That was 1980 when the Airplane came out.
Oh, that couldn't have been that late.
Really? No, Airplane. Yeah.
Oh, Airplane. Yeah.
Yeah, Airplane. But what I mean was you had all these serious actors like Leslie Nielsen and Lloyd Bridges and Robert Stack, and they were able to get a second wind of their careers doing that stuff.
Well, they were willing to make fun of themselves. I mm-hmm. thought that was very bold. And also that the credit goes to the director for making them feel they can get away with it, I think. That was mm-hmm. they were wonderful. Bridges was sensational.
Yep.
But there was another line, the doctor on the plane, that was so legitimate. It was so funny.
I speak jive, no.
You have to find a doctor, but a doctor who didn't eat fish.
Oh, right.
It's a real. It's an honest to God. Anyway.
Hey, let's not. Hey, let's not forget about your tongue work in Loaded Weapon One.
That could have been better. Anyway, that's always fun.
A few months ago, I actually found on DVD and bought and watched again Name of the Rose.
Ah, yeah.
Very scary in that, you are.
6 months shooting. Sean was terrific.
And that was your the first of two times working with Sean.
Yeah, he's a good guy. At least he was with me anyway.
That's good.
Yeah, we got along very well. I usually have trouble with anyone, but, you know, you can't get along with everyone.
Mm-mm.
Some people are impossible, and we won't even go into who they are. Okay?
I would never ask that. That's not this type. This is not that type of program.
Yeah.
Just one film fan to another.
Oh.
I just
don't understand why we can't make better films. I really don't. I mean, we've got all these examples for the last, I don't know how many years now. There's no excuse for this crap. You know, there really isn't. There's just no respect for the word, I think, and that's what the problem is. Enough of this slice-of-life action crap. Let's get some art back into it. You know, those wonderful moments when you hear a theme or you see even a few frames of a picture and you go, I want to watch this again. I can't wait to see this movie again. That's the kind of movie that we can still make. I mean, the idea that you have to spend $200 million for a picture and you still can't make anything but trash, it's absurd.
Do you get a lot of offers from, say, independent directors?
Well, I get them. It's just that even that, they're not very good. I'd love to work for Del Toro, for example.
Ooh.
He and I got along very well on Mimic. Mm-hmm. And we made promises, and I'm from the border of Mexico, and we both speak Spanish, and I just haven't heard from him. So I'm sure when something comes up, he'll call me. Because he's a sincere man, but I think he's terrific. And he started out as an independent. What was that wonderful story from Buñuel when he was approached? Do you remember that picture that Woody Allen made where they're standing in line and he talks, they're having an argument?
Annie Hall.
And Marshall McLuhan.
Marshall McLuhan is back behind the plant, If Life Were Only Like This.
Yes, well, he originally wanted Buñuel to do that.
Oh, really?
And it was going to be a different conversation, but it was going to... And he offered, you know, he offers everyone the same money, take it or leave it. But for Buñuel, who said, I can't do it, I'm busy, I'm working. And he said, well, I'll give you such and such amount of money. And he went up to $30,000, and which is outrageous for Woody Allen to offer.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a wealth of money for him to offer. And Buñuel still said, I really can't do it. And then he reflected and said, that was more money than my last film cost me to make. $30,000. He was shooting in Mexico at the time. But
sure.
The point is, it doesn't have to be an expensive film to be a good one. You need a script. You need some good actors. And if you got a good script, you're going to get the actors.
Mm-hmm.
You get me just in a second. But anyhow, you do work for free. I mean, my theater work is practically, I have to underwrite it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Theater doesn't pay.
Oh, we know about underwriting here. This interview,
you know very well what I'm talking about.
This interview is made possible by memberships like yours. Thank you.
Love. I got no complaints. But I really think that, as I said before, I've got a lot of friends in this business, long, long-lived friends who are just brilliant actors with all these chops, and they can't get arrested. I have to keep reminding them and myself what luck means in our lives. And I'm a very proud actor. I really love my profession, but I'm also full of humility. I'm constantly grateful for these breaks I've been getting. And I'm absolutely sincere when I tell you that.
Well, I'm looking back at even the film work, there doesn't seem to be anything that is embarrassing. And I've seen people with lots of money and lots of acclaim, and they do something that's just... It's just downright silly and not in a complimentary way. And that I don't think it's ever happened with you.
Keep talking. Listen, you're very nice. Thank you so much for this.
From 2009, my chat with Academy Award-winning actor F. Murray Abraham, because it's Oscar season. We got a quick time for what dead person we like, because we don't have time for dead people we don't like. A big shout-out to documentary filmmaker Bruce Sinofsky, who died this past week. Best known starting in 1992 with the documentary Brother's Keeper, about a murder trial involving one brother killing another. Also best known for the three Paradise Lost documentaries about the West Memphis Three, as well as the really fine documentary Metallica, Some Kind of Monster from 2004. You do not have to be a fan of Metallica to enjoy this band, this documentary about one of the world's biggest bands falling apart before our very eyes. And of course, all three Paradise Lost films definitely worth checking out. Words to live by, Soylent Green is full, Zardoz is spoken. Go see a good movie, you deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California. Good night, Michigan.
Soylent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.